Growing the Game with Ballsy is a podcast dedicated to growing the game of football in Saskatchewan. Each week, Michael Ball will talk with Rider guests, but he'll also highlight amateur athletes, coaches, and builders in this province growing the game we love. Now, here's Ballsy.
I've got my jelly-stained finger on the pulse of football in Saskatchewan. I joke. But hey, as this podcast grows, so does our collection of guests, like three fine gentlemen that join me today. Chris Warnicke from the Winston-Ole Wolverines, talking about his team's first win in a very long time. They're hoping to use that to snowball themselves into some success early on this year in the Schwann Conference. Also, we'll speak with Henry Burris. Yes, Smilin' Hank stops by in the Where Are They Now features. He talks about his time here in Saskatchewan and what he's doing now, because it is Where Are They Now. And on the other side, BT, Brian Towers, U of S Huskies, all-time winningest football coach in Canadian University history. He went into the Canadian Football Hall of Fame, and he stops by next to talk about the weekend that was. This is Growing the Game. Time now to speak with Canadian Football Hall of Famer Brian Towers, former coach of the U of S Huskies. How does that sound, BT?
Well, it sounds pretty good, and certainly wasn't anything that we expected or anything that we, you know, he didn't go into the business thinking it would result in any of this type of recognition. But it's much appreciated, and I'm very honored to be in that group.
Now, I was there in March in Regina here, obviously, when CFL Week was on and they announced the induction class. But what was it like to see the bust and just the whole weekend unfold?
Well, I mean, the whole weekend was a tremendous experience, and you know, to be included with those five CFL greats and people that have had an impact on the game, you know, at the pro level, especially, and certainly Stan as a builder and everything that he's done. So again, it was a tremendous honor to be there with those people and really be honored with some of the greats of the game.
Brian Towers joining us here, Canadian Football Hall of Famer, legendary coach in the university ranks. Brian, what would Hall of Famer Brian Towers tell 27-year-old Brian Towers when he takes over the Huskies program? Is there any advice you'd give him now?
Well, I think the only advice I would have would be, you know, to be a lifelong learner. The game changes so quickly, and you have to really stay current. And you know, we were very fortunate here to have lots of help through Football Saskatchewan, providing some assistance to do that. And you know, I saw the game evolve so much over 35 years in the business. It's much bigger, much faster, and a much more complex game than it was when we started 35 years ago.
Brian, what was the biggest change for you in your career?
Well, I think a couple of things. I think the game's evolved a great deal from a technical and tactical point of view. There's so much more use of motion, and the game has become much more complicated. I think the other biggest change is, you know, in recent years, especially the last 10 or 15 years, the importance of recruiting and establishing and maintaining a very competitive program.
Yeah, recruiting is a huge deal. It seems like the coach's work is never done, and most of your work is probably, if you want to have a successful program, done in the off season.
Yeah, and you know, that's certainly from a head coach's perspective, that took on a much greater role than it did in the first years. We seem to move further and further away from the field, and I was fortunate to have a great group of assistants that did a tremendous job of teaching for a number of years. And you know, a lot of the work of a head coach is off the field in terms of working with to secure funding and to attract personnel and players to your program.
What kind of player did Brian Towers like? What would be a Brian Towers type of player?
Certainly one that's very committed. You know, we always stress the importance of being a student athlete for sure. The education was important, but we like good, honest, hardworking kids, and fortunately Saskatchewan is full of them. And you know, I don't think many of our players had huge egos. They loved the game, and were willing to work 11 months of the year to become a better player and a better person.
It's amazing, isn't it, Brian, how we churn out the football players in this province with our limited season, isn't it?
It is, and you know, I think that goes right back to the, you know, to the importance of our only pro team in the Rough Riders. There, they've set a bar that a lot of young Saskatchewan athletes aspire to, and we've been fortunate over the years to see many Saskatchewan high school players and young Saskatchewan football players go through the amateur ranks here and go on to be great pros.
Yeah, Brian, what do you think of the CFL's decision not to have tackling now, like padded practices now? What do you think that's going to do for the game?
You know, we talked about that a lot last week, Michael, and I tend to be in agreement with some of them. As a coach myself, we certainly moved to less contact over the last few years and recognize that the game has become much more physical, I think, than it was. Certainly rule changes have helped. But this one, I think there's a balance that has to be reached. And I'm a believer that you need some contact. I would be in favor of maybe one padded practice a week because I do think that especially linemen need to work on those one-on-one skills or they will deteriorate over the course of the season. And some things you can replicate without pads, but I think one padded practice a week would allow you to continue to work and develop those skills. I know it's necessary at our level. We have to continue to teach fundamentals and to teach them, and I find it much safer to be doing it in a padded situation than a non-padded situation. So I think it's something that they're going to work through. I understand the thinking behind it, but I would like to see a little a balancer and maybe still work towards one padded practice.
Now, Brandon Bridge brought the Canadian quarterback into the spotlight. I've been talking about it for a while, but everybody's talking about he's not a Canadian as in terms of the ratio and all that type of stuff. Do you, Brian, think that one day we will see a starting Canadian quarterback in this league? Because, at least to see guys like Bridge and Buckley, it'd be great for the game because, at the grassroots level, because, you talk about recruiting and young kids. You got a kid that's a good receiver, but he's also a good quarterback. He's probably going to go be a receiver because he knows he has no future after university ball or junior ball to go to the pros.
Yeah, for sure. And there's been a lot of great college quarterbacks that have gone on to be great receivers in the Canadian Football League too. But I really think that they are getting much better coaching from a fundamental perspective. One of the problems is we didn't start playing early enough, and quarterbacks never got enough game situation to really, really develop their skills in this country. But I think that's changing. Andrew Buckley has proven that he can play in this league. He was a Canadian trained player. I think there's been a few before him that had they been given the opportunity and had an opportunity to develop their skills over 3 or 4 years at the next level would have become great quarterbacks. There will be more. There's some good quarterbacks at the CIS level right now. Certainly two or three of them are in this conference in the West now. Noah Pickton's is a great passer. Whether he has the physical attributes to become a pro or not, who knows? But he certainly has the game savvy and the ability to think and play the game at a high level. The kid in BC is a very talented athlete with a great arm. Kyle Siemens here is a great passer, whether he has the athletic skills to go on. But they will come. I just don't think there's, nine of them in the country right now. But in the not-too-distant future, we're going to continue to develop and develop more game-ready Canadian college quarterback.
Yeah, you talk about your old school there, the U of S Huskies. They've got a guy from Regina, Mason Nias, on that team that's about 6'1", and he can throw the ball like nobody's business. I look at a team like the Rough Riders that hold training camp in Saskatoon. I think it would be in the Riders' best interest, just to give them some free advice, to work with a kid like that, much like I think the Stampeders did with Buckley, and then they end up drafting him. You could groom your local guy right there in your own province.
Yeah, well, the CFL has taken has made some moves in that direction. We have had an internship program where some of the top quarterbacks in the country have had the opportunity to go to camps and participate through training camp. I know our quarterbacks in recent years have had that opportunity to attend training camps. both, you know, we've had them in Edmonton and in Montreal and in Toronto, and they've come back as better players. And it's just, you know, kind of immersing them in against bigger, faster players, more experienced players. And, you know, I think the other thing that's come into the offenses have evolved at our level as well. So,
right.
You know, most teams are running pro offenses now, and that's what I mentioned earlier. The game is much more complicated than it was maybe 10 years ago.
Two more quick questions for Brian Towers, the Canadian Football Hall of Famer. Brian, 27-year-old Brian Towers gets on the field coaching the U of S Huskies. What do you remember about your first practice? Do you remember that first practice or that first year?
Well, I don't remember too much about the first practice, but, you know, I think one thing we realized is that we had a lot to learn. There was no question about that. You know, if there's one thing that we did right, was realized very quickly that we had a lot to learn about the game and about handling people and just about working at the game year round. You know, that was a lesson that was learned quickly, and we took our lumps for two or three years while we were learning it, but then we're fairly successful after that.
Hey, Brian, did they do justice on your bust?
You know, that's incredible work that the sculptor does with those. My family said, my kid says it's kind of creepy in some ways, I think all of them were great likenesses. I didn't realize my head looked that big, but it is a nice, you know, it'll be there in perpetuity now. So it's a great honor.
Hey, so how do you want to be remembered as a coach? You're obviously not dead. You're going to be around football fields, but how does Brian Towers, if we were to write the bio on your football career, what do we want to say about Brian Towers, the coach?
Well, I think somebody that worked hard and approached the game with integrity. You know, we're very proud of the fact that we ran a straight up program. We treated the kids with a great deal of respect, you know, we also you know, we tried to do the best that we could within the framework we were given. You know, we didn't bend the rules. We didn't pay anybody. We didn't give them phony jobs or a place to live or anything that. We just took our kids, brought the best kids that we could into our program and tried to develop them the best we could on and off the field. And hopefully when people look back that, you know, they said that we had some success doing that.
This guy had three Vanier Cup championships, the all-time winningest coach in the university ranks. He could have a big head, but he doesn't, only on his bust. This is Brian Towers. It's Growing the Game. Thanks for this, Brian.
Thanks a lot, Mike. Appreciate it.
Time now for Where Are They Now, and we're joined by Smiling Hank Henry Burris. First off, Henry, how'd you get that nickname?
You know what? My rookie year in Calgary with the Stampeders, Jeff Garcia, Jamie Crisdale, Rocco Romano, they always used to talk about how I smiled all the time. And I guess it was just given to me by all the vets on that 1997 Calgary Stampeder team. They ended up calling me Smiling Hank, and it's one that's stuck with me ever since.
So, you know, give us a synopsis in terms of your time in Saskatchewan. Just looking back in your time in Saskatchewan, what did that time mean to you, Henry?
You know, I always said it was a great time that was cut short. You know, I mean, I had to take that NFL shot, you know, after the 2000 season, but it's a place that gave me an opportunity to not only grow as a player on the field, but to grow as a man and to get out and do a lot of things, learn how to, you know, get active in the community. So therefore, when I went to Calgary after coming back, I was very active in the community in Calgary, and it's because of being around the great people there in Saskatchewan. But Saskatchewan helped reinstate the passion for me loving the game. I mean, it was one place I definitely wish could have lasted a lot longer because I felt we could have won more championships. But also with the amount of friends and how much I love being in that atmosphere, it's a lot like where I once called home in Oklahoma. But again, like I said, I mean, that was one of my most memorable times as far as Saskatchewan. You know, it was just a shame that we didn't get to win a championship together, but it's always good to see how the organization and the entire province has progressed ever since.
I have to laugh at the hate that, you know, it's good-natured ribbing for the most part, but how people just, you became public enemy number one. And in actuality, you wanted to stay here.
Exactly. I wanted to stay there, but the thing was, people disagree with me by saying, you know, I wanted a chance to play, and just so many things were said, you know, that I didn't want to compete. And I'm like, well, what have I been doing my entire life as a quarterback? You know, but the thing is, I mean, you know, as a player, it's hard to turn down when somebody's offering you double the money that you're being offered there and assuring you a starting job and those types of things. And I was married at the time, so you and I both know if I was to go and tell my wife, okay, this is what we got, do we turn down half to stay here or do we take double the money to go somewhere else? You already know what that answer is going to be. But again, I mean, it's all about either us being selfish or doing what was smart. And I'm pretty sure 100% of the people in Saskatchewan who knew the situation afterwards, they would have done the same thing.
2004, though, man, up until this last Grey Cup, 2004, that West Final was probably the best game I ever watched Henry Burris play on any team. You were playing out of your mind. What do you remember about that game?
Oh, man, 04 was a game where I felt numb the entire game, and it felt like almost like a wedding day or something. I don't know, but it's one of those days where you're in the zone and you have such a good feeling going into the game, and it's like once things just start, you're able to see things before they happen. Two, you feel so confident with everything, and it just feels like the ball's coming out of your hand perfectly, and it just feels like regardless of what the opposition does, you're going to get the job done. And we had so much confidence as a team when we went into BC Place that game, and we knew some of our matchups, if we could get them in man-to-man with guys like Elijah Thurman, with Jason French, with Corey Grant. I mean, we had so many great players, Matt Dominguez, guys who could get the job done, and we just felt like we were going to win that game and go and win the Grey Cup. And just unfortunately, you know, BC found a way with Dave Dickinson there in the end to pull it out, and whoever thought Duncan O'Mahony, of all people, would have kicked a 47-yard field goal, his longest of the entire season, and you know, helped BC end up winning in overtime. And it was just unfortunate because we were definitely the better team.
Yeah, and who knew your guy, Paul McCallum, Mr. Automatic, would miss from 18 yards out. He'd never do that again. That's an unfortunate ending, but we won't go down that road. But you talk about it kind of being like a wedding day and being numb and time standing still. Was it like that for you in this last Grey Cup where you start the Grey Cup with a knee injury? Like, go through that day. That must have been surreal, man.
Well, I tell you, for me, it started that week of the game. Just because, for me, I knew it was my final Grey Cup. I knew it. And so doing the things that it would take for us to be in the zone, that's all I wanted to do that week. Because I felt great going into that Grey Cup game. Honestly, we all knew in our mind our Grey Cup was to be Edmonton in the snow. Because of one, the East never gets snow. It's always the Alberta teams. Now the roles were reversed. We had so many young guys that had never played in snow, but it didn't faze us one bit. But then we got to Toronto, and all we heard about was Calgary, Calgary, Calgary. And in my mind, I'm like, I never played Calgary. Like, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And we should have beat them both games that regular season. But I felt, you know, for me being a part of the game, I could be a difference. But all they talked about was Bo Levi and how great he was. But I'm thinking, hold up, this is one season for him, and I'm supposedly had a Hall of Fame career. Mm-hmm. And so, again, there goes me being bad Hank as far as in pissed off Hank again. And so I couldn't wait for this game just to get the opportunity. And honestly, Ballsy, when my knee, when I felt the knee just crunch on me and the grind and crunch and the pop, I said, you know what, guys, I told the doctors, do whatever you have to do. Just get me on that field for 2-3 minutes on top of that. Make sure I can just go out and play this game, because I'll deal with the consequences after this, because I'll never get this opportunity back. And to see those doctors huddle like a team would or an offensive unit, mm-hmm. and come with the game plan, they put that knee, the needle inside of my knee, inside the capsule, and they pushed some fluid in there, which completely numbed the knee, took the pain away, and they gave me some Toradol on top. And for those who take a Toradol know exactly how much of a wonder drug that is. You don't feel a thing.
Henry Burst joining us here for a couple of minutes as the Hall of Famer is talking to us here. Okay, so Henry, in terms of what you're doing now, you're busy with the TV and everything like that, but you're busy all the time. When I call you, I think I'm trying to get a hold of Dwayne Johnson on Ballers. And your summer, your summer started. You were over in England with on Canada Day with the Grey Cup. Tell us about that.
Well, you know, here I am. I'm the guy who's trying to get citizenship, and I was representing the great country of Canada in London, England for the 150th. But it all had to entail just, you know, going over and thanking our expats and our service women and service men who serve our country abroad, and being able to take the Grey Cup and being part of that ceremony, and also doing some of my reporting duty with Bell Media, with CTV and TSN, and all different stations across our great country here. For me, it was a dream come true for my wife and I to go over. I mean, it was a quick turnaround. We were over there just 4 days, and, you know, changing time zones 6 hours on top of that, you know, it was quite the test for us. But we had a blast, my wife and I did, and we look forward to going back to London again. But being able to be there and seeing so many Canadians and so many British family, so much British family coming together and just, you know, thanking what they call the greatest country in the world. And these are the people who lived in Britain saying this, the greatest people and the greatest country in the world. Just to see them there all celebrating there, and for us to be one of the focal points of Canada, for us it was quite the honor.
Why is it important for an Oklahoman, Henry Burris, to be a Canadian?
Well, number one, for what this country has done for my wife and I. I mean, we've been able to experience so many things that commonly we wouldn't be able to experience down home, and you know, we have both of our children here, and we've made so many great friends here. We've lived here for so long. This is home for us now. When we go back to the U.S., yes, we have family there, but I mean, so do so many Canadians have family back in the U.S. And I know my parents and you know, sisters, siblings, everybody lives down there, but honestly, this is home for us, and my kids, this is all they know, and we want them to continue to experience what they know. And honestly, if we try to take them out of hockey, they might kill us. So the thing is, we're loving it here, and we want to continue to make this place home and continue to grow our family here and continue doing the things that we've done, you know, for the last two decades of my life. And I want to make sure that my family continues to be grown in the place that we call home and a place that we love so much.
Henry, weird for you to be in the media, on the media side, and critique some of the players you played with and against. Is it weird, uncomfortable?
You know what? It is to a point, but, you know, behind closed doors, players are always talking about other players. And for me, I've always been a guy that, yeah, you know, I might have talked a little bit on the field when it came to beaking other players, but I was never a type of guy that would make it personal. I would never call anybody out personally. You know, I would tell them, you know, they're no good, and, you know, we're going to come after you. I would say the stuff that you would expect for people to say, but there were never, ever any personal attacks on the football field. And when doing media, I try to keep it the same way, because it's nothing personal. I mean, you want guys to get better, especially when they make mistakes, because we've all made mistakes. But you want to make sure the audience realizes that. But you also have to hold them accountable, too, because we're professionals. And, you know, when you make a mistake as a professional, you're expected to be held accountable to that standard. So, I mean, yeah, I try to find that sense of balance between, you know, criticism, but constructive criticism. And that's kind of the pendulum. When the pendulum comes to myself, that's the direction I try to lean in, as far as when critiquing these guys and breaking down the things that they do in a game-to-game basis. As a matter of fact, this weekend I'll be with the panel, so that'll be perfect timing on being able to critique things and you know, truly break things down as far as what's going on in the world of the CFL.
We got Henry Burst for a couple more seconds here. He's a very busy guy, so we're lucky to get a couple of his minutes here to talk to us. Okay, Henry, I have a lot of quarterback injuries, including your old team. Anybody tried to lure you out of retirement, or are you trying to stay married?
Yes, that's the biggest thing. I mean, everybody's asking me if I'm coming out of retirement and everything, and honestly, I told people, no, I can't come out of retirement now, because – you know, what we were able to accomplish here, that was it. That was the final chapter of Henry Burris playing Canadian football. And I have an 11- and 8-year-old son. I have a gorgeous wife at home that I can't wait to spend time with. And honestly, that's where my time is ready to be spent. And, And that's all I want to do now is spend time with Nicole and my two boys and finally be a dad around the clock, because I have my father there with me, and it's time for my boys to have dad there for them. And yeah, I know that, you know, my boys always said, hey, Dad, we wish you were on the field playing. But honestly, now you see how they act when they see me here at the house all the time, and just the joy in their faces when I come through the door. And now they're riding their bikes up here to where I am right now, big smiles on their faces. This is what I look forward to, and I'm so happy that, you know, we're all together again and being able to just grow our family and, you know, see our kids grow before our eyes. And I get to be at all their activities, and that's a dream come true for me.
Okay, I want you to give a message to the young football player or kid listening to this interview, because Henry Burris played with a chip on his shoulder his entire career. Everybody told him he couldn't do it, even when he had proven it time and time again, right up to the last time with Ottawa, I guess, because you lost the starting job for a bit, you know, albeit to injury, but it wasn't until the Grey Cup that you kind of, you know, walked out on top, and then there were no more doubters, so to speak. So, Henry, got a message for the young kids.
Well, I've always told kids that, you know, if you ever have a dream, never give up on that dream. Regardless of what people say, to me, you know, people talk about you for a reason, because they see potential. They see that you have something that they don't have. And when you know you have it and want it in your heart, never let anything, anybody, or any words come between you and achieving your dreams. But all it takes is just hard work and time. And honestly, when you make a mistake, like they say, we're all human. We're all human, and even the superheroes and cartoons make mistakes. So continue to push forward, continue to fight hard, because superheroes had to do it, and if you want to be a superhero, you've got to go through the same things in order to reach your goal, which is the end of that movie. But the great thing about being human and being us as kids is that end of that story can go on forever for the rest of your life.
Hey, that's a great answer, Henry. I got to ask you one more question, because you're the most qualified to ask this of. So, Brandon Bridge has a big game as a Canadian, but then he goes on a rant, which I agree with, by the way, saying it's ridiculous that I don't count as a Canadian on the roster. What do you think about that? A Canadian quarterback not counting as a Canadian on the roster?
You know what? To me, that's kudos with how good he is. I mean, honestly, I take that as a compliment, because really it doesn't matter in my mind, because the thing is, Canadian-American, if you're good, you're good. But right now, for him being a young quarterback, just focus on your game, because honestly, at the end of the day, you and your family have to eat. It doesn't matter what they call you. As long as they call you Brandon Bridge, that's all you need to be called, because right now everybody else is marveling that he's Canadian and everything, and that's great, but now he's got to go prove it again. Now the next team has one more game of film on him. And right now, his whole focus should be on how can he get better, and what are other ways teams are going to adjust to him to try to take things away from him. That's way more important than what people call him, because at the end of the day, it doesn't matter if he's from Jupiter, Saturn, Pluto, he's Brandon Bridge, right now the starting quarterback of the Saskatchewan Rough Riders. And if he wants it to maintain and stay that way, it's all about how he plays. It doesn't matter what they call him.
That's Where Are They Now, and that's Henry Burris. Thanks for this, Henry.
Hey, thank you, brother. Anytime, sir.
All right, this is Growing the Game, and we're talking now with Chris Warnicke, former Regina Ram and now the head coach over at Winston-Knowle Collegiate with the Wolverines, who celebrated their first victory in how long, Chris?
You know, that's been a few years. It's been definitely before I got here, and a much-needed win. Absolutely. Yeah.
Strangely enough, Chris, you were telling me before we did this interview that the last time you think Winston-Knowle won is when you were coaching Tom.
Yeah, unfortunately, I had a few dry years as a head coach in high school football, and without picking up a victory. So it was very good for my morale as well, getting this win. I think it's been, if I think way back, I was head coach at Johnson in about 2004. It was probably the last time I got a win as a head coach in high school football.
So how do you keep your bearings about you? Because it's got to be, you know, it's a grind, man. You're a teacher and you're a coach, and you're not having success on the field in terms of wins and losses. How do you keep your spirits up to keep and turn your team spirits up?
Well, it's tough, right? Because, you know, especially coming here to Knowle, and we got a lot of really talented guys that are moving on to the next level and having some success at the next level. And to not see them have success on the field at the high school level was pretty frustrating. So, you know, we spent the off season working hard on the little things, getting stronger, getting faster, and just working on our confidence, you know. And I knew that if you know, they kind of bought into the system that the wins would come. And you know, last week we finally got our first win in a long time, and hopefully we can start a trend of going in a positive direction now.
Yeah, you're playing the Miller Marauders this week. Chris Warnicke joining us from the Winston-Knoll Wolverines. Can you teach somebody how to win? How do you teach them how to win? Like you always hear that phrase, hey, a team just needs to learn how to win. Is it the simple fact that you put the practices in place and then hopefully they win on the field, and then that's all the validation you need?
Well, and that's the tricky part. That's what we were really struggling with, because we knew we had the athletes. And even last year, we had the athletes. We had really good football players, but they just weren't used to winning. They didn't know how to win. So we were really struggling as coaches on how do you teach this? How do you get guys to win? So, you know, and I don't know if we have the answer to it or not, but, you know, we made every drill and practice mean something. Every competition that we do, you know, we set goals in our off-season training to try and get guys to be better than the guy beside them or the next guy and try and get better. So, you know, if you have that sense of competition in every single drill that you do, then maybe it means a little bit more. You don't want to lose, right? And I always said this, I hate losing maybe more than I actually like winning. So it's that drive to not want to lose for me that I just want to win every single time, no matter what. If I'm playing, you know, my son in Uno at home, I want to win. I don't want to let anybody win. So it's kind of almost, we want to get out of that mentality of like, okay, we, you know, even when we're doing offense defense drills in practice, you know, don't let that guy beat you in any drill, because it's not going to make you better, and it's definitely not going to make him any better. So you want to win those battles every single chance you get.
It's a really good message from Chris Warnicke, the Winston-Knoll Wolverines head coach over there. In terms of yourself, you've been coaching for almost two decades at you know, Johnson, Tom, and Winston-Knoll. You talked about you played with the Rams, a very good career there. Why do you still coach? Why do you like to coach? Because you got a young family at home. That, you know, coaching takes a lot of time. Believe me, I know. Well, why do you like to coach, Chris?
I ask myself that question sometimes too, when kids aren't showing up to practice on weekends. Like, why am I doing this? I should be coaching my kid. But, you know, I enjoy the competition. You know, like it's tougher for me as an adult now to find those places to have some good competition where you maybe have an effect on the outcome. But, you know, it all comes back to, I had great coaches when I was a kid growing up, and I really, those guys, you know, you want to give back. You know, I got so much out of the game of football that I feel like I need to give back, and I want other kids to have the same kind of experiences that I had in high school football, in RMF, in university football. You know, I want those kids to have those same kind of positive experiences that I did. You know, and the game of football is such an amazing thing. It's not just about football. You know, and you know, it's learning how to work as a team and triumphing over adversity. Like, you know, there's a lot of guys who play high school football that'll never play university football. Most of them will never play university football or junior football. But it's those little skills and traits and characteristics that you learn from the game of football that make you a better adult and a better employee. As well, too.
Yeah, that's good, and that's something I know that the Rams always preach when I played there and when you played there. Just a couple more quick questions for Chris Warnicke here from the Winston-Knoll Wolverines. Are you concerned about the state of football in terms of numbers? Because I know back when I played in high school at Sister McGuigan and then O'Neill, we had to cut guys. Now, you know, it seems a lot of these high schools are begging for players to come out. I think I saw your roster. It's like 38, 40 kids. The Riffle Royals just down the street, they'd be about that, which is amazing when you think about the population of those two schools.
I know, and it is a tricky situation, you know, and like the same thing. When I was in high school, we had 80 or 90 guys on the team. You know, guys were dressing in the hockey uniforms just so we had enough uniforms to field a team on there. And it's, you know, it's a different dynamic. Kids are working. They have cars. They have cell phones and all those things. We find our numbers are dwindling every single year. So, yeah, we're sitting around 40 guys, and it'd be nice. 50 or 60 guys is a really good number, and it's tough because now you got guys that are going two ways and you know, playing on all the special teams, and it's tough to run a program with that many guys. Yeah, so I don't know where we're losing them. Is it because of economics, or is it, you know, the whole concussion thing? I don't know what the problem is.
Hey, before we let you go, let's highlight a couple of guys on your team. I know Jordan Hoffert's a guy that I coach, and I really like that kid. He's on a tear here. He's got like 7 touchdown passes in the last couple of games and 2 rushing touchdowns. I like him at the quarterback spot.
Yeah, you know what? He's phenomenal. He is a really smart quarterback, and I think that's what maybe separates him from maybe some of the other guys in the league this year, is that he knows where to throw and when to throw it. And, you know, he reminds me a lot of a guy like Mark Mueller and Noah Pickton, these guys who may be a little bit smaller in stature, but they understand the game so well that they know what's happening before everyone else knows what's happening, and they know where they're going to throw the ball before everyone else does, and that's why they're successful. And I see Jordan the exact same way. He's not a super huge guy, but he's got a great arm, and he really understands the game, and I've been super impressed with him this year. And I think if he wants to go play at the next level, I think he's a guy that definitely has the talent, both, you know, physically and intellectually, to play at the next level.
Robert Mims' kid plays in your team, doesn't he?
Yes, he does. Deshaun is Robert Mims, a former CFLer, and he's been phenomenal for us this year as well, too. Last year, unfortunately, broke his collarbone in the first game of the season, I think in the first quarter of the first game of the season, so we didn't have him last year. And, you know, and we really missed that, right? He is such a dynamic player. He's so athletic, he's tall, he's fast, and he's got amazing hands and field sense. You know, we're missing, last year we had the leading receiver in Levi Duty, and he hasn't played it down for us yet this year. We're hoping to get him back within the next 3-4 weeks here, cross our fingers. And with those two guys on opposite sides of the field playing slot back, we're going to be, you know, pretty tough to stop offensively, I think.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, and you got Forrester at running back, I believe, and you know, I coached him, and I've coached the likes of Peyton Williams and Trenton Wilhelm. I mean, you got some good athletes there on that roster, as you said. Just got to get them to come together and get that confidence going, and maybe that does snowball now that you won your first game.
Yeah, you know, there's some really, really good football players, and you can tell that, you know, when I came in last year, when I first saw these guys, that, you know, it's like these guys get football. You know, they've had some good coaching in RMF, and I think that's really what makes a really good high school football program is the grassroots. You know, where did they come from in RMF? Did they get good coaching in RMF? And the better the coaching is there, you know, the easier, you know, our job as high school coaches is, you know, and the more football you play, obviously the easier the game becomes. And when these guys are getting good coaching at a young level, it sure makes high school a lot easier.
And the Winston Wolverines have a great coach in Chris Warnicke, the former Ram, doing his part there to grow the game in Saskatchewan. Thanks for this, Chris.
Thanks, Michael.
This has been Growing the Game with Ballsy. If you have a football story you'd like to share to help us grow the game, email Michael Ball at mball@harvardbroadcasting.com.